Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Well, welcome. My name is Jim Reedy. I'm with Sheehan Finney Bass and Green, and this is the New Hampshire Tech Alliance HR Exchange. And I am thrilled to present my good friend Dave Chulo to talk today about a true tongue twister, I think, and we came up with this idea, which is retaining top talent in turbulent times. One of the challenges that continues to be an issue for HR is recruiting and retaining talent. And I can think of no better speaker to address those issues than David. Welcome, my good friend, David Chulo.
Hey, good morning, everyone. How you doing? First of all, thank you, Jim, very much. I appreciate it. Look, this is really an interesting time. There is no doubt that it's challenging when it comes to keeping, finding, and retaining talent. So I'm going to talk about three major areas today, which is the recruiting, the engagement, and the compensation side, because I think all three go together very clearly as to what we're looking for today in regards to what you really need to do to keep retaining fine talent. And so let's just start right up front. This morning, ironically, I opened the Morning Brew. Maybe some of you use that. It's a kind of consolidated news feed that comes across an email every single morning. And one of the headlines in it was talking about what people are talking about, the great resignation. I'm not calling it that. They also use the term the great reshuffle. And here are the stats as of August, because those are the ones that have the deepest numbers, is that 4.3 million people in the United States voluntarily left the workforce. Voluntarily, that's 3% left their jobs. 3% of workers just walked out the door. Gone. 4.3 million people. Businesses have 10.4 million openings right now. 10.4 million openings. And this again is of August in terms of the numbers. September numbers are just coming out. I don't have yet the breakdown of those. But the bottom line is it's a lot of people leaving. It's a lot of people that have decided after COVID or for whatever particular reason to just move on. And I always get the questions that get asked to me, where'd they go? And look, that's a really good question. Well, let me give you a couple insights. First of all, you may remember that before COVID, people were retiring at approximately 10,000 per day. Baby boomers have hit their stride and they started to retire. It's about 10,000 a day. The numbers now are over 18,000, some between 18 and 20,000 a day. And if you have this huge amount of individuals that are really going and leaving the workplace, they've said, and I can quote some baby boomers, I can quote some executives, I can quote some directors, they're just not having fun anymore right now. These last 2 years, especially the last 19 months, have just been such a strain in regards to what it is, that has certainly become one of the major areas that they're leaving the workforce. Second is there's an entrepreneurship boom. A lot of people, they were home during the COVID times. They were either non-essential, or I would say everybody was essential, but they used the technical term. They were able to stay home. And they made the determination that, hey, I can go on the internet and I can sell something or I can do something and I can make some extra money or I can do it. And they're turning it into from a what we'll call a hobby into actual work that pays. And my gosh, if you are on any social media platform, there must be almost every day hundreds of ads that come through, opportunities to do something on your own, to use Amazon or one of the other platforms to try to make money. And there's no question that people are doing that. So the entrepreneurship part is absolutely an issue that is out there. Third, we know that certainly during the COVID times, this hit women very hard in regards to staying home. If you look at the numbers, it's in the chat, there are a lot of parents that stayed home, but predominantly it appeared that based on the numbers, a lot of women stayed home to take care of the children. That's not to say men didn't as well. They did, in fact, but it was predominantly the numbers speak or the numbers talk about making sure that these are, you know, they took care of their children. Heck, I have a, in my development, we have about 12, 15 homes. It's about five developments around us. You had some of the parents gathering together. They were taking the kids out of the public schools because they were tired of the Zooming and all that. And they brought them together and they had little community schools where parents and teachers were teaching their groups together. That means they stayed home. And by the way, the cost of daycare and everything has just been skyrocketing. Anybody who has any children knows that's true. I have 13 nieces and nephews, and I have, I don't know, 8 or 9 grandnephews and nieces. And the reality is everybody's talking about the costs are just continuing to increase in regards to maintaining it. So you have a lot of the time, somebody is staying home to take care of the child and take care of the family a little bit like it used to be back when, that you have somebody actually handling that, because the actual cost of that is as much as somebody earning a paycheck. I'm going to talk about paychecks in a little bit later, but those are some of the key areas that we're really seeing that are affecting where they went. Is that all of it? No, we certainly have a million reasons that could be happening from a federal and state level. This has certainly happened a lot in the restaurant area, the retail area. You've got a lot of areas that have been hit extremely hard. So if that's where they went and that's where we're dealing it, that means you as employers have to start thinking even more creatively and even different than you have in the past. The past number of years, I've been talking in regards to branding of an organization and management. And I've talked about this probably every year for the last 3 or 5 years, but it is now more important than ever. The reality is every one of you that goes out and hires, every one of you that is trying to bring a person of talent to your organization has a brand. I'm talking, sure, the organization has a brand, but now I'm talking about you personally have a brand. You have a brand that matters. And the reality is people today are able to look up about you and find out if you're a good leader or manager or not. And we certainly have heard about the big boards, of course, in regards to, the ones that you go on and you look it up, whether you go on LinkedIn or whether you go to some of the other Facebook or any of the social media platforms, and they're talking about you as leaders. There's chat rooms about it. There's forums about it. There's certainly other areas where you can go to find out about you as a leader. Glassdoor is another one of the big ones. But there are offshoots now that are also popping up that talk about your brand, about who you are, and if somebody wants to work for you. And so now organizations and HR have to be not only aware of how they're perceived in regards to the company and what that brand looks like, but also what each individual leader and manager looks like. And when I say that, I mean that. How they actually perform, how they actually deal with their people, how they talk to their people, how they act, because employees are just now saying, I'm not going to take it anymore. And I have heard that. You know, CMA does a lot of HR outsource work for organizations that can't do HR or project work for ones that can. And the reality is we're hearing this every day. We're hearing it all the time. I've just literally, just yesterday, dealing with an employee that had just said, my manager treats me bad. I think I'm going to call it in. And the owner was talking to them. It was a family business. They said, why? And you've been here 15 years. And they said, no, I realize it's stressful, but I don't need the stress anymore. Now, look, you can have your opinions about stress, and it's different than it used to be. It's the same. It really doesn't matter what the opinion is. These are the facts on the ground. Your brand matters. The way you handle things matters. What you say matters. Always has, but right now, today, it's really, really important. So your social media posts, things you look at as an organization. If you're not present digitally in a really positive, fun way with some short videos, by the way, I'm talking 30 seconds to a minute. If you aren't promoting your organization today, don't be surprised if you're not getting a lot of talent. The other thing that's interesting is, and I've also said this a million times, but I'll repeat it again because it bears repeating, because unfortunately, I constantly go to websites for companies that I'm looking for to see in terms of talent. And I say, how could I apply at this organization? Now, some of you do what we call that post and pray. You go out, you post a job, you pray somebody applies. But, and they might have to go to one of the sites to do that, or they might have to go to your website to do that. And when you look at it on a phone screen, right? When you look at it on a phone screen, it looks pretty small. And when you click the button and it says, fill out pages of information, the reality is nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to do that anymore. And then I hear managers say, and HR people say, well, if they can't fill out a form, I don't want them. Not today. Today, if they can fill out a form, that's a plus. The reality is, depending on what you're looking for, they don't have the attention span today to do that. And you're going to say, well, then I probably don't want them. Well, then you're probably not going to get as much talent as you need. That's today's reality. I was talking to one of the universities, we won't say who, to protect the guilty. And they flat out said that 19% of the college kids that they are graduating cannot properly read, cannot properly write, and cannot properly follow directions. They're still passing them. I'm just talking facts here today. I'd love to say that it's everybody, that everybody on here will find that person that knows all this. I'm telling you what is coming out and what you're going to have to deal with. And that's just the truth. So let's talk about our key tips. If you have not gone on your website and you have not figured out that all you really need is four pieces of information to hire somebody, what do you need? You need their name. You need probably their email. You need definitely their phone number. You probably need the carrier information. You're going to go carrier information. Yes, so you can text them from your email if you wish to. Or you can text from a phone without carrier information. But you need that little blurb at the end of the email to be able to text from your email. You need to be able to text them immediately if you like what's coming in. Have a link for their resume or have them say what they're applying for. And leave that so they don't have to fill it in, because the reality is they may be good for something else. Don't assume what they're applying for is what they'll be good for. Get numbers, get people, get information in. If they are applying online, then you need that bit of information. That's about all you need. You should be able to do it within about 30 seconds, and then it should come right directly to you, and you need to respond within 2 hours. By the way, 2 hours is a little bit too long, but we'll go with that as the basic. If you are not responding to people within 2 hours, if they're applying online, they're applying at other things, others will scoop them up. We have organizations that are literally manning. When those are coming in, they go directly to an alert and they are immediately calling them. And they're calling them immediately on the phone and they're saying, and I quote, love to talk with you. Do you have time to FaceTime right now? If you're on another device, can we Zoom right this second? Right now, let's get eyes on them. Let's not wait. Let's talk to them. Let's find out right about them right now. If you really like them and you get the information, let's then worry about bringing them in or going through some formal things. But you should be able to hire somebody within less than a week. Yes, sure, you'll have pending backgrounds. Yes, you'll have drug screenings, all those things you need to have. But you should be able to hire somebody within a few days or a week. And I'm not just talking about a base level position. I'm talking even senior positions, engineering positions. You should be able to do it within a week today. Because guess what? Another company is going to scoop them up and do it just as fast, if not faster. That's the reality of today. That's how fast it is. You know, we do executive search and we are really moving. We are texting. We are posting on social media. We're using Facebook. We're using Snapchat. We're using LinkedIn. We're using Instagram. We are everywhere they are. Not where we necessarily like to be, but it's where they are. You know, people say all the time, well, we have to get a little creative. We have to go find them. And you have to call them. Now, if you want to really find the right talent, you go to all these sites, you get all that information, and you get the resume or you get the name and you call them immediately. You get their phone number, you look it up, you get on social media, you IM them, you FaceTime them, you do whatever it is to get them. Reach out is far better than what we'll call post and pray. You have to be able to reach out to connect them as fast as you can. I was on with an executive the other day, marketing executive, and he was looking for an assistant. And I'm coaching him. I do executive coaching. And I was coaching him, and he said, well, we're going to get HR. HR is going to post the position. We're going to get the information out there. He said, it'll probably take me about 2 weeks to get through the process, and then I'll get the information. It will hit the wires. We'll expect some resumes to come in sometime within another week or two, and then we'll be able to get to the hiring part of it. We'll bring them in for a couple of interviews. I expect this to take about a month to 2 months. And I paused, and I went, do you know anybody you'd really like to hire? Like people that you know in the industry, you've been doing it for a long time? He goes, well, there's a couple people. I said, why don't you just call them? And there's this long look on the face. He said, well, HR has to do that. I said, why does HR have to call somebody you know? I'm being real. I said, why do you not just call them and say, hey, I'm just calling to see how you're doing? Checking in, I got this great opportunity. I'm not saying that you're interested, but maybe you know somebody who could possibly be interested. I talked him through the process. He made two calls. He hired the person within 3 weeks. Still too long, but within 3 weeks, he hired the second person that he called that he knew. By the way, HR was thrilled. Think of all the time saved, the posting time saved, all that stuff. This is how you find talent today. We know people are looking. We know people are out there. You have to pick up the phone. You have to call them. An actual phone call. Email, people ignore. Texting, they'll look at, they might respond. Facebook, social media, they'll look at it, they might respond. But if you pick up the phone and get a hold of them, they will most likely talk, especially if you know them. Even if you don't. I mean, that's part of what we do. We just keep calling. Constantly on the phone, constantly making those connections, trying it from different angles. This is how you look at it.
You're listening to a presentation by your host, David Shulo, at the New Hampshire Tech Alliance HR Exchange, given earlier this fall of 2021. This is the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio, on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back. In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB, 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. The New Hampshire Tech Alliance HR Exchange, through the law firm Sheehan Finney, asked HR Power Hour host, CMA's David Shulo, to speak this fall 2021 on the topic of retaining top talent in turbulent times. David is excited to provide tips on recruiting and retention in these challenging times of COVID, remote work, augmented unemployment benefits, and compensation.
All right, a couple tips on resume findings. Job boards are great for resumes, but let's be honest, that is about 30% of the actual resumes available. Not everybody puts their resume on job boards. As a matter of fact, the really good talent never has put their resume on a job board. if they're really, really talented, they just go from one job to another because people call them and know them and move them forward. Some of you might be like that. You've never actually applied for a job in your life. I know I never have. I never had to apply for a job. Somebody has just recognized me, walked in, said, hey, or called me and said, hey, I'd like to talk to you about it. Or a recruiter has called me and say, hey, we have this opportunity. That's about 70%, 60 to 70% of the market. That's the best response that you have to have. You have to connect to them each and every time directly and personally. So using LinkedIn, using Indeed, Indeed especially for the resume side, there's a backside of Indeed, not just the posting side, but the resume side. Going and find that. You can get some free ones, and then, of course, you have to pay for it. But if I remember correctly, it's somewhere like a buck a resume. You get to pre-screen before you actually purchase the information with the name and so forth. I don't know. Anybody think a dollar is too expensive to find top talent? I don't. All right. And you can buy plans on that. That's pretty cheap considering the amount of ads that are out there. So take the time to go out and make that happen. And make sure that, as I said before, you're mobile ready to have that conversation right now. Why would you not immediately reach out and have a conversation? Try to get them right on the phone right then, or within a very short period of time, and get them right on a FaceTime or right on a Zoom call as quickly as possible to talk to them. Most people can close faster on a deal if they see you and they can read your body language, and managers are part of the equation. Well, there's another tip. It's not just HR that has to do the recruiting. It's also the people that are actually going to be their bosses. And that's one of the things that's probably the most frustrating thing that I hear is that managers and leaders, you have to be the ones that have to go out and have those conversations. I mean, you're the one that actually works with them. And 80% of the people leave companies because of their direct supervisor, not because of HR, because of their direct supervisor. Those are the people hitting the ground each and every day that are actually dealing with the people that are working on the line or working in the organization. They're the people who know the people in the industry. They also have employees that know people, you know, and we really need to make sure that we're going out and making that happen. By the way, as many of you know, your best employees are your brand ambassadors. They are the people that go out and sell your company. They're selling it because they're happy. They have pride in the organization, and they want to really make sure it's a great place and they bring great people in it. Incentivize them if you haven't already. I've seen incentives right now anywhere from about $500 to $2,000 per person. That's about what we're seeing in the market today. That's paid out over typically it's an initial payout, then maybe over 3 months, and then maybe after over 6 months in terms of those payouts. Spread the word, get them out there. As I mentioned before, managers are a key part of this. They also have to be part of the interview. They also should be the ones that are staying in touch with them between the time somebody leaves an organization and when they join. That's the weakest part of any hiring. When somebody's trying them to stay, and trust me, they're working very hard to have them stay. That's really important, that the manager stays in contact, not just HR, okay, to make that happen. And one last tip on that, got me going on this. The other thing that's important is give them something to remember you by. When an employee starts with the organization, some of the best things I've seen is they've sent out some swag, something that makes them start connecting, a hat, a shirt, a mug, something that they can feel like they're connected with you already. They can see every day that has your logo on it, something that they know is coming, something that's ahead of them and they're looking forward to. Give them something to remember it by. Don't just leave it to chance that that's going to happen. Okay. Let's talk about engagement. This term, I think, has been a little bit overused. But the reality is that engagement is an emotional, intellectual commitment of the employee to deliver high performance to you and the organization. Why I use that definition, it's really clear is that it matters to the individual. It's about their pride. It's about how they're connected to you. By the way, pride is the third most reason that people are connected to an organization and stay. Number one, of course, direct supervisor. Number two, leadership, providing the vision and direction forward. And number three, that they have pride in the organization, that emotional commitment. I feel like I want to belong. I feel that's important to stay here. I love what's happening. I love the people around me. I love what's going on. And yes, I use the word love. Love is that emotional connection. Some of you have been in organizations for 3, 5, 7, 10 years. It's because you love it there, or really like it strongly, or you love something about it enough that you are constantly still there. That is that connection emotionally and performing. Now, from an engagement to keep them, that means the reality is that you have to find out why they're really excited. This is an individual conversation. It's an individual dialogue. Engagement programs are fine. I see a lot of them, you know, stuff that is great about posting internally, something great about an organization, about having your contests and about having these things and using social media to use them to really put out the information and grow the organization and talk about the people. It's great. But it's really a one-on-one conversation between the direct supervisor and sometimes the ownership and that person to see what's going on with them. Why they want to stay there with your organization, while they're excited about being there. That's such great information about knowing why your team is staying. That's such great information and understanding why it's important. So the first thing you need to do, if you haven't done it, is really go back and have the conversation about, you know, what's exciting about this place. By the way, they may tell you things that aren't. That's okay. You got to know what isn't going on well, too. That's really important. Matter of fact, that will be the indication of if they're going to stay or not. How annoyed, how emotionally connected they are to the issues that are going on as well. By the way, nobody has a perfect organization. Nobody has a perfect relationship. We talk about it all the time. You know, being at work is sometimes, you know, more stressful and more emotional than being at home. I know some of you know this, but the truth is that work sometimes can be safer than home. We have a lot of people in a lot of organizations that come to work to get away from what's going on in their lives. And that's the truth. It's a safer environment. It's an environment where it's less stressful. Maybe they're taking care of children at home. Maybe they're taking care of their parents. Maybe they're dealing with cancer. Maybe they're dealing with an issue. Maybe they're dealing with things that are going on outside their lives. And they get to come to work and for 8 to 10 hours. They get to think about something that is not that craziness going on in their lives. Don't be fooled. They, of course, are thinking about it. But they get to focus on something else. And you, as the HR, and you as the leadership in the organizations, need to understand each person's hot buttons, each person's engagement level, each person's reason for why they're working and why they're there. It's absolutely critical to find out that information and know why they're being the way they are and what it is that's going on. I'm sure many of you have had people that have been great employees, and then suddenly, it seems like overnight, poof, they take a dive. And you have, you know, it sudden happens, maybe happens for a few days, and next thing you know, within a couple of weeks, the direct supervisor is coming into the HR office going, oh my God, Bob, what the heck's going on with Bob? You know, hey, look, he's been great for a long time, but I think he's slowing down. I think there's a problem. I don't know. Look, I can't have him on the team anymore. He's just not doing it. And it's a complete surprise to HR. It's a complete surprise to everybody. But they haven't said anything. They haven't done anything. I'm not going to talk to him about his personal life. That's what that is. No, that's personal. We don't handle that. Yes, you do. Yes, you do today. Being a caring manager is critical today. Being a caring leader is critical today if you expect them to stay. I don't mean coddling. I don't mean somebody who gives everything away. Matter of fact, caring leaders really care about the individual's success, the individual's family success, their own personal success, the organization's success, the success that moves forward every day in their lives, their career success. You as an HR professional, you as a leader have to be at the forefront of having these conversations to find out what's going on with the employees and getting supervisors, getting managers to think about this in a key and ever-present manner every day. who have nobody who knows what's happening between 5 o'clock when they leave and 7 o'clock when they arrive. Between those hours at night, even if they post on social media, you may know some things about them, but you really don't know what's going on. And they come in the next morning, and this is when trouble starts, because that next morning they walk in and what was funny yesterday is not funny today. What has happened yesterday is not good today. And they're not in a good position. Engagement means we have to engage them daily. Daily, weekly. Conversations have to be all the time. If you're still using annual performance reviews to talk about their performance, wow, that's old school. You need to be having conversations on a monthly basis or at least on a quarterly basis, providing a one page back and front review for them. 4 or 5 questions. You know, what happened? What was great about the last month, last quarter? What went well? What is challenging? What can I do to help you on it? What do you need from us? Right? What are your goals? Right? And what do you need for training development in terms of it? That's it. It's a conversation. It's a dialogue. You have to have these conversations. You might go, oh, Dave, we just don't have time for that. You don't have time for a 10-minute conversation about somebody's performance once a week or once a month or once a quarter. That's not even a thought process. We know we have the time. Absolutely, we have the time. We're just not set up to do that. And you can still do an annual performance if you want to wrap it up for something having to do with their compensation and so forth. I'm going to talk about compensation a little bit, because the reality is that we're not even talking about annual compensation anymore. We're talking about compensation being broken up in a different way. And I'll get to that little tease for later, okay? So the reality is that conversation they are having has to be dialogue about what's going on in their lives, what's going on at work, what are some of the challenges. So you got to get the C-suite out of their offices. You got to get them on the floor. You get them out in the field. One of the best things we ever did was take a CEO in one of the organizations I'm coaching, and he has 6 trucks on the road. He went out with a truck every day. He hadn't done that in years. He learned so much. They changed so many things just by asking the questions and seeing what's going on. I'm not sure we've got to get back to basics about engagement. We have to get back to connecting and connecting for engagement each and every way. Okay.
You're listening to a presentation by your host, David Shulo, at the New Hampshire Tech Alliance HR Exchange, given earlier this fall of 2021. This is the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. The New Hampshire Tech Alliance HR Exchange, through the law firm Sheehan Finney, asked HR Power Hour host, CMA's David Shulo, to speak this fall 2021 on the topic of retaining top talent in turbulent times. David is excited to provide tips on recruiting and retention in these challenging times of COVID, remote work, augmented unemployment benefits, and compensation.
Now I want to talk about flexibility. Every organization is different, and every ability to do work from home or work from flexible work times or those type of things depends on the organization. If you're in a manufacturing environment, it's pretty hard to get the CNC machine in their living room to get the work done. It's just going to be a little bit difficult to then get that machinery off to the next house to have the next person work on it. right? That's just not going to happen. So for certain and many industries, this idea of work from home or working from this is just not possible. But that doesn't mean there can't be flexibility. And what I mean by flexibility is the ability to understand that people have things that go on in their lives and that things that they need to take care of. You know, some of the big automakers are changing the way that they do the line. You may know they have shifts, either first, second, third shift. And it's always kind of you work first, you work second, you work third, you work this, you work that. There really wasn't a lot of flexibility. And we're seeing manufacturers go to, hey, you can work first shift, and then maybe you sign up for a second shift 1 week because you need to have something that happens, and you work in agreement with the person on the second shift, and you start flexing between shifts and schedules, and you move people around in a different way. That's flexibility. That's looking at what people need. Right? That's looking in terms of if somebody wants to come to the office and they normally would work 8 to 5 and they want to work 10 to 7. Now, depending on the organization, that may be fine. Some that may be a problem. But for most organizations, I've seen very little that say we can't figure out a way to balance that and make it so that somebody else can work between that 7 and 9 period. If, for example, you're doing customer service across, you know, the country or across the globe, there are ways to be flexible, and you have to embrace flexibility, and you have to be creative. And you need to create policies that allow flexibility and options. And hey, it's the reality is you have to make that happen today. Because if you talk to anybody that looks to go and leave an organization, they're typically leaving because either they've had enough with their leadership or their management, and they say they're not flexible. It's the number one thing we hear, you know, from the outplacement side. We hear people just aren't flexible. We're not, you know, they're not listening to me. They don't understand. They don't explain it. They just get upset. How you can ask for another day off? Why do you have to take that? Well, today you have to be extremely flexible and realistic. Still following policy, still being accountable, still holding standards. And all that still is applied, but you have to be constructive in how you put these policies together, and you have to make sure that they're balanced and that the execution of how you implement these is really critical. Now, the other thing is we have an organization that is working all remote. A lot of organizations have gone to that. That's fine. And they struggle a little bit in regards to what they will call culture. Now, culture is a big word. It's all-encompassing word, right? Culture is an all-encompassing word that means that connectivity between a group of people that work for an organization and what leadership wants to be and what the organization wants to be. I want to provide insight into a conversation where I was having a dialogue with an attorney, an owner, and a member of one of our consultants, Ashley, and myself. We're on this dialogue. We're talking about an organization, and the leader is really frustrated. By the way, HR was on there as well. They were really frustrated because they were fearing they were losing the culture of the organization because of the remote work. And they just didn't feel that they had the same connectivity they had before, and they weren't sure that it was working. And there was this big dialogue between everybody in that conversation about what it really means, except for the 33-year-old person that was on the Zoom call, completely quiet. And I recognized after about 5 minutes that there hadn't been any conversation. So I looked over and I said, hey, Ashley, I said, what's your thought on this? And her words were, well, to be honest with you, I think you've defined culture the old way. And that you've defined culture as what you feel it always used to be. I'm perfectly comfortable having a culture and being fully engaged. We're working remotely. I don't have to be there. I can work through Zoom and through other platforms and have a full engagement with an organization. That's how I view it. And it certainly took everybody by like a pause. We're like, it's interesting because we're looking through our lens. We're looking at what we feel people need. We're looking at how we perceive that to be. We're not looking at it through the lenses of all, for example, the Zers coming up or even the late millennials. who are like, hey, I grew up having a phone on all the time. I grew up, you know, as a digital native. I know no different than to having FaceTiming every day. And I put that to the test. I actually called my niece, who's 21 years old. And I asked her some questions. I said, you know, it occurred to me, you always FaceTime me. You never call me. She goes, well, no, I want to see you. I want to chat. I said, well, wouldn't it be better in person? She goes, yeah, FaceTime or in person is the same. That's the mentality. And we're not used to that. So when we're talking about engagement and connecting with a culture, make sure you're not looking at it through your own biased lens. Make sure you're not looking at it of how senior leadership, typically baby boomer X, are looking at it. You're really looking at it through the lens of the individuals in the organization, how they see things, how they perceive things. And that's an important eye-opening thing to think about today, because that means you may have to still have the culture you want, but act on it differently and be engaged with it differently. Okay, a couple of other things that I want you to think about in terms of tips. First of all, you hear something negative, you hear something positive, you have to respond quickly. It's really important. People lose engagement pretty fast if when you hear about something, you don't do anything. So one thing, if you're going to do an appointment engagement survey, great, do it. Just respond to it. If you're going to do nothing with that information, don't do the survey. Forget about it. Don't do it if you're not going to do anything with it, because it's not going to be perceived as fair. And yes, fairness matters. It matters to each person personally. It matters really importantly to each person that they're treated fairly. Their perception of fairness is their own world. But it's pretty obvious, just like when you're talking about harassment, a reasonable person standard, fairness is a reasonable person standard in regards to that person. The other thing I talk to you about is think about emotional intelligence. You know, when we do coaching, we talk a lot about EQ. Emotional intelligence, especially today, the part of empathy. But empathy has to be balanced with accountability. It has to have two. After, as the yin and the yang, has to both be there. You can be empathetic as you wish. You can understand what's going on from the third party perspective, but you have to still hold accountability. You can be a caring manager and a caring leader, but also hold people accountable. There's nothing worse to a high performer, somebody who's fully engaged, if they're not having everyone held accountable to their level, right? To a same level across the platform. Bobby always gets away with X. Susie always gets away with Y. It's really important to make that happen. Career pathing. If you want to keep engagement in the organization, you need to make sure that there's a career path forward. And you may say, hey, look, our organization's really small. We only have so many careers to do that. Fine, career pathing doesn't mean you have to be promoted. Career pathing doesn't mean that you have to get a new role. Career pathing could be, what could you learn more? What activities could you do to grow? What career opportunities could there be within the organization to showcase your talents? Provide ample opportunities for their growth, whether it's up the ladder, laterally, or just doing other things that matter. People like a variety of things to do. Give them options to do so. Certainly, if you have obstacles or challenges, please make sure that you remove them as quickly as possible. And as I mentioned before, make sure you are really doing reviews in a new way that fosters open dialogue and isn't just being done just because it has to be done. There's nothing worse. By the way, I did annual reviews for 70 to 80 people when I was at Levi's because I had that many locations that I was seeing. Anybody want to do 70 or 80 direct report reviews annually? It was the least favorite thing on planet Earth for me to do once a year. I talked to them all the time, but I didn't know back then that that's really what mattered. When we get to the formal review process, it's great, but it shouldn't have been nothing, and there was a surprise anyway. So it was just a formal thing we were doing because it had to be done. Make sure that if you're going to talk about it, that you really do it the right way. One thing that you can do as HR is really influence senior leadership about how they must be articulate and clear on the vision of where this organization is going and what matters to them. If leaders and owners aren't providing that information in a transparent way, you need to be very clear about that they need to. Part of engagement is they feel like they're connected to the ownership, they're connected to the senior leadership, they're connected to the C-suite. It's really important that they do that and stay focused on it. There's a lot more to that certainly, but that's the basic level in terms of it. And the last thing I'll mention today, because it is so important, and yesterday was Mental Health Awareness Day, is that workplace wellness really matters. It's always been that we've ever just talked about it openly like we do today. And by the way, it should have been always that discussion, but it wasn't always that way. And I still hear some leaders that go, oh, we have to talk about that stuff. Yes, yes, you do. And HR, you guys are really important in leading the charge to make sure that happens. It's critical that every time you have a dialogue, if somebody comes forward that talks about stress, that talks about things that are going on in their lives, that they're having a bad day, you listen. You know, the one thing COVID did is it brought this to the forefront. And while there have been a lot of bad things about COVID, no question, this probably will be the one thing that is a positive influence today in terms of going forward in the workplace. So if you want to engage people, make sure that you're not only talking about the basics, but you're also talking about them personally from a caring perspective and an accountability perspective. By the way, go back, boomers, Xers, didn't we always want to work for people that cared about us? Didn't we always think about the fact that, hey, wouldn't it be better if somebody didn't scream, yell, holler, do all those things with us? We always knew it. We just probably didn't do a lot about it because it was different. It was different back then. I didn't say right or wrong, just different. So let's move forward doing what we know is right, not what we may have learned in the past. That's probably one of the biggest things from a coaching perspective that we have to work through sometimes to make that happen.
You're listening to a presentation by your host, David Shulo, at the New Hampshire Tech Alliance HR Exchange, given earlier this fall of 2021. This is the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. The New Hampshire Tech Alliance HR Exchange, through the law firm Sheehan Finney, asked HR Power Hour host, CMA's David Shulo, to speak this fall 2021 on the topic of retaining top talent in turbulent times. David is excited to provide tips on recruiting and retention in these challenging times of COVID, remote work, augmented unemployment benefits, and compensation.
Compensation. The amount of wage compression where wages keep going up and up and up is really causing problems today. We all know there was this huge push and has been to get to a $15 minimum wage. I don't know many people that are paying less than $15. Maybe you're paying $14, $13, but there's very, very little talk about $15 anymore. Matter of fact, I was reading an article this morning and it talked about now people are talking about a $21 minimum wage. That's in Seattle and some of the other places. But Bank of America announced that by 2025, the minimum wage for Bank of America would be $25 an hour. A New York Times article, just a year old, was talking about $33 an hour minimum wage. To quote one of my colleagues who I was on the Zoom with, we were saying maybe we were born in the wrong time. I was remembering $5 minimum wage. And yes, I'm dating myself, but I mean, come on, $33 an hour, that's like almost 80 grand. I guess the minimum will be 100 grand pretty soon. Now, we know that there's inflation and all these challenges, but all I'm saying is that this is the expectations that are being set today, right? I mean, my nieces and nephews who are 16, 17 years old are getting $18, $17 an hour for stocking shelves. I think Hannaford was paying $17 to $18 an hour for night shifts in the evening. I mean, this is really serious compression, especially on middle management. That's where the compression is, right? We're pushing up the minimum wage and we're giving some increases to middle, that middles area, right? In terms of it, it's compression and bouncing a little bit on senior leadership now. There's this compression in the middle. And that is where we're causing the problems in terms of retaining talent in some ways because of that compression. And in the last 8 months, we've seen the amount of increase in pay, especially at the bottom levels, go up around an average of 30% just this year. So if you're looking at compensation data that you got at the beginning of the year, outdated, right? It's outdated. We have organizations that are bumping people all the time. In reality, you need to have compensation data that's coming in that needs to be aged. And so you need to age the compensation data by the rate of what we're seeing, not from inflation, not from consumer prices, but actually what the real rates are happening in the marketplace today. And that's the trick of compensation, is knowing what's really happening out there and being able to forecast what is anticipated in terms of what's happening going forward. And then making your budgets and making your analysis and giving your HR leadership and into your senior leadership the amount of information on what we project for 2022. By the way, there's no signs right now that that's going to be stopping. There's no signs at this point there's going to be anything that is going to stop that. Now, do we think it will be at the same maybe 30, 25, 30% rate? No, it's probably going to ease up on the percentage. But the reality is that it's going to actually continue to increase. We know labor costs are going to continue to increase. Right, we just talked about the fact that there's 10.4 million jobs. People are being scoffed up from everywhere, and they're offering these great amounts of money. The other thing I'll mention, which is interesting, is there's not been a lot of discussion about benefits. Now, while benefits are important, don't get me wrong, and they are still critical in terms of making sure that people are getting good general wages, especially once the earner has a family and they need health, they need all these things. But we've really been talking a lot about the cash compensation is where we're seeing the real bumps in it. And if organizations are paying for a percentage of healthcare, they're paying for dental, they're paying for 401k, they're doing all these other things, that's great. That's almost become a, yeah, we know you're going to do that. That's not what we're seeing people talking about. We're seeing, I want more cash. I want more income. I want more spending ability. I want into more investment ability. I want to be able to take that money and do what I wish with it. The benefits are a given today. If you don't have basic benefits, you need it. Now, of course, younger years, they're not so worried about it. They should be. Actually, if you start at 20 and invest properly, you'd be very set by 60 years old and retire very, very happy with multiple millions of dollars if you do it right. But most people don't talk about that. They focus predominantly on the cash compensation, which is where the compression is happening right now. So in today's environment, you need to be very aware of what your compensation strategy is, what your dialogue is going to be about, where are we going to create bands in the organization in terms of making sure people are being perceived and we are able to defend our compensation structure and defend it legally should there be a challenging to it. Why do I say that? We know that the EEOC, many of you probably do the EEO one each year. And there is going to be an EEO part two. We just don't know when it's coming out. We know it's coming. It's just a matter of time. This was originally talked about during the Obama administration. And then it, of course, went away in the Trump administration. And now it's coming back for the Biden administration. We've been expecting to come out any time. It hasn't come out yet. There's been certainly a lot of other things happening on the plate right now. But you're going to be having to provide compensation to the EEOC to provide them of what you're all paying. The same information you give out in an affirmative action plan or of it in terms of generalities, what everybody makes. Now, people will say, well, why do you need that? And the director of the EEOC has been very clear. A lot of it is they want to see if there's fairness. They want to see what that structure looks like. Is it defendable? And that's going to be a real go forward process. You're going to have to defend what you're paying. You're going to have to defend it, what your structure is about. And so you need to make sure that it's a defendable compensation structure. And so you really need to be looking at what is your career path and what are the multiple bumps that you need in that to make that happen. What's that strategy look like today? I said we'd talk about recruiting and about pay, and I'll do that right now. Let's talk about the reality of once a year annual increases. Today's world of 6 seconds is too long on a social media post or something that you write is 6 seconds is too long. Our attention span of getting a raise is great. Kind of fades after a few months, kind of fades into the half year. So what we're seeing a lot of organizations talk about is compensation structure that is divvied up multiple times a year rather than just on a yearly basis. Why? Because it's constantly having somebody see something come in and increase in their paychecks, something that's going in through it. So a lot of companies are taking the annual compensation and breaking it up over a period of time throughout the year and giving bumps during the year. One, it helps in the fact that the compression is happening from the ground up. It also provides a feeling of worth for the employee because you're not just waiting a whole year to get something in your check. You're actually constantly getting bumps throughout the year. So that's a compensation strategy that we're seeing a lot of organizations starting to talk about and are looking at for 2022. We're also seeing, of course, hiring sign-on bonuses. Those were all the rage back in 2007, 2008. They're all the rage right now. Heck, I've seen sign-on bonuses that they're advertising them on the sides of streets and little signs that say, hey, we will pay you to basically come here. You know, it could be anything from $500 to $1,000. Could be a sign-on bonus. Well, here's what employees say about that. What about me? I'm here. You're going to pay them an extra $500, $1,000? What about me? I don't get an extra $100, $500, $1,000 because I'm here. And then you go, oh, then I got to pay state bonuses. I got to pay, you know, bonuses to keep people. Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's a part of the conversation of that bumping out throughout the year that you provide an additional thank you to the employees that who have stayed with the organization. That's all part of the strategies you have to think about if you want to find talent and keep talent from a compensation perspective. I've also seen organizations talk about profit sharing. Even organizations that are, you know, family owned or anything, maybe we're gonna share some of the profits with our employees. We're gonna be looking at a different way of doing it. If we all do well, we all share with it. I would absolutely seek legal counsel for that, but the reality is that you can use consultants and others to look at how to make that legal and make it work and work with the attorneys to make it happen. Look at it differently. I'm not talking about something outrageously crazy. I'm talking about ways to look at compensation that can matter to your employees, that can matter to everybody in the organization, and can work on that compression. Because if somebody's making $18 to $20 an hour, if we're going to start talking about $21 or $25, what are you going to pay the front that next level manager? What are they going to be, 30, 35? What are you going to deal with? What are we going to get up to 40, 50 for leadership? What about senior leadership, right? We've got this salary compression coming in terms of making that happen. So, you know, it's really important to understand that you want to be paying over time. You want to be focusing more energy into a devised, defendable, important plan of how to implement your compensation to maintain and retain talent. Last thing I'll mention in terms of the compensation side is benefits. benefits are now even more personal than ever, other than healthcare. That's a given. We know healthcare. People have been doing some surveys. If you see them, they talk about what is more important to them. Maybe dental, maybe pet care. It's another big one that has certainly been in the market today. By the way, if you don't know, the pet market is exploding in terms of the amount of cost it is. I have two dogs, I can tell you. In the last 2 days, I spent almost $2,000 on one dog, right? Just like that, because of some pancreatic issues and different things. Boom! Did I buy the health medical plan for pets or pet insurance? No. Should I have? Yes. Had I thought about that for my organization? No. Will I think about it for the next time? Yes. Right? Think about what it is that are friendly benefits to the employee. Don't just assume they're going to want things. Go out and ask them what they want. Now, you're going to say, should I do a survey? No. Don't do a survey. Get a focus group together. Talk to people. Stop with the email surveys. Nobody likes them in the first place. You get about a 5 to 10% return. Maybe if you force them and you twist their arms and you say it's mandatory, you'll get up to 70, 80%. Congratulations. But the reality is nobody's reading the emails anyways. You get too many of them, right? Go talk to some focus groups. Go talk to people that work for you. And don't always bring in the same people. Bring in different people for these focus groups. By the way, this works for engagement as well. This works for the whole thing we're talking about. Go talk to people. The art of focus grouping is amazing. Used to work in the retail days too. We bring in a focus group and we talk about product, we talk about service, we talk about what people want, we bring in employees. That hasn't changed. It's an incredible method of having a conversation to find out what people want. And you get to watch body language. And you get to find out what they really think. And if they're hedging or if their eyes roll or if they do different things. Things that you can't see on a survey. Today more than ever, in this challenging environment, it's really important to understand if you want to find talent, keep talent, engage talent, and pay talent well and appropriately, this has to be a structure and a process that you put in place. If you haven't done it before, there are plenty of people to help you with it. If you haven't made policies like you've ever made, well, we've made more policies than ever this year, or last year too, make sure that you get help and guidance doing so, right? I'm happy to help. I know Jim would be happy to help. Both organizations together, we would be happy to help and provide you with the guidance, support that you need to make sure that you find the right talent, you engage the right talent, you pay the right talent, and you retain the right talent. I have one more thing I want to discuss. What do you do when people are leaving? Do you have that dialogue with them? Now, people say, well, I do an exit interview. Great. Some people don't. Some people do. Do you have these conversations about when they're getting ready to leave, why they're going to leave? Of course I do. We try to keep them. How do you try to keep them? Well, we find out what the problems are and we try to solve it. Okay. They tell us they're going to work for someone else. They're going to get X more money and we can't compete. Money is usually the sixth or seventh reason a person leaves an organization. Six or seven. Typically the top ones are, do they feel like they're engaged with and believe in the organization and its direction? Do they feel a sense of accomplishment? Do they feel like they feel valued? Do they still have pride? That's the question you need to find out. You need to change the exit interview. You need to change the pre-exit interview before they actually leave to find out what the undercurrent really is with the leader, with the direct supervisor, with what's going on. Even if they leave, you then have to go back and address what's actually happening. Too often, I see exit interviews. They go in it. They look at it. They go through the process. Go, oh, these things happen. Oh, well, We can't do much about that. You know, Bobby's been at that position for a while and I don't know what we're going to do about it, but you know, he's a little old school. He just, you know, he doesn't treat people, but he's the only one that knows this process. He's been here. We need him. I'll give you an example. We had someone who in a manufacturing environment and they did analysis for succession planning. By the way, if you're not doing succession planning, you should. And they determined that they only had one person in the organization that could run one of the machines. He'd been doing it for 41 years. And he's the only one that really could run that machine well. And it, that machine was responsible for $1.5 million contract that was ongoing for a federal government contract. And the question came up is, we know we have issues with this person, but, you know, we can't lose the contract. If you're held that hostage in terms of what's going on, and you're willing to sacrifice engagement of others because of one person who's holding you hostage, that's your own fault. And you as HR professionals need to stand up and go out and say, that won't work. And you have to have the tough conversations with owners and tough conversations with leaders to explain that that one situation is our own fault. We need to get somebody else trained on that machine, and we need to make some decisions and hard decisions about how things are moving forward. Because today you can't lose 2, 3, 4 people because of someone who is in the organization who isn't performing correctly. You can't do it. The one person that you're keeping and coddling because of some reason, no matter what it is, from the owner's nephew to the owner's son to whatever it is the reason you're losing talent, word will get out and you will lose even more talent. And you will not be able to hire the right talent because it's all going to be all over social media. It's going to be all over the sites like Glassdoor. It's going to be all over the fact that they don't care. And that today, ladies and gentlemen, is the number one problem with hiring talent today, is your reputation, your team's reputation, your individual supervisor reputation. And you need to make sure that that's focused on. Absolutely critical today. Hopefully I've given you a whole bunch of tips today and ideas. Thank you very much, everyone. I appreciate your time.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk, WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. This was the presentation done by David Chulo to the New Hampshire Tech Alliance HR Exchange, given this fall, 2021. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.